You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to the Get Certified Together, created as part of Technicove, a free knowledge-sharing website based in London. If you love our content, please like and subscribe from your favorite podcast player. Reach out to us via www.technicove.com for suggestions and collaborations.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Get Certified Together series. There's no better way to kickstart our monthly digest program where we will be bringing someone from industry who is security expert and who can guide us in understanding some of the real life incidents which happen across organizations. Now, these incidents are specifically picked up from cloud computing or related technologies because ultimately that's the theme of the whole podcast. Now, for today's episode, I'm bringing someone who was already part of one of the episodes in CCSP series as well. Jihao comes with amazing experience around security and he is pioneer and he's experienced in this field. Of course, I will not take much time and I will let him introduce himself, but I hope that you will like the episode and you will gain something new and something interesting from today's episode. After this short ad break, we will be catching up in our main episode with Jihao. Hey Jihao, how are you?
Yeah, good. Hi, how are you?
Yeah, doing good. Just busy in learning more about security stuff. Still working full-time in cloud computing and amateur in security side of things. And that's why we always love to hear from experts like you so we can improve ourselves and learn more about this evolving field. So before, you of course have been to our podcast before, but maybe we have new listeners as well. So if you can maybe give a quick introduction so people can know like, who are you and what's your role in security side of things?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, thanks for inviting me to this podcast. So hi everyone. My name is Zihao. Right. So I'm a security architect and consultant with the Central Bank of Singapore. Right. So I also have 17 years of experience spanning from software engineering to various security fields. And I'm currently also serving as the vice president of the ISC2 Singapore chapter, right, and sit on multiple committees within ISC2. And so I'm also an adjunct lecturer, right, at the London School of Business and Finance, where I share practical industry insights with the next generation of cybersecurity professionals. And also, beyond my professional roles, I volunteer with Workforce Singapore, right, as a career advisor, offering guidance to individuals aspiring to enter the cybersecurity industry.
Amazing. I think the first question which comes into my mind when I hear like you are involved in so many different projects, of course, there is a day job and then you are doing some volunteering as well. Some of us, like people like us who are, and means personally, I know you have a family as well. So some of us like who are working full time, we have to take care of like family and personal side of things as well. And of course, with post-COVID, when offices are opening up, we have to look for like we may not be working full time, work from home. So some of us have to go back to office as well. Mm-hmm. How really like you can involve in so many projects and you keep properly like your work-life balance, because that must be pretty exhausting, right?
Yep. So I believe, time management is very important. Right? So I rely heavily on my calendar to juggle my day job, my side projects, volunteer works, and also time with my family. And I also follow it diligently to ensure nothing slips through the cracks. Right? So to make sure that everything went through smoothly, right, according to schedule. So each day, I craft out specific time slots for my schoolwork, adjunct lecturing preparations, and also volunteering commitments. And also, importantly, the quality moments with my family. So this clear structure actually helps me to stay focused and maintain a balanced routine that supports both my personal and professional goals. So my advice to anyone who wants to learn, grow, or volunteer while keeping up other responsibilities is to plan in advance and decide exactly what you want to achieve. And once you set clear goals, commit to your schedule wholeheartedly, right? So by breaking your plans into manageable steps and sticking to a well-organized calendar, you can make steady progress without sacrificing your relationships or overall well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's a nice advice, because planning is something which in offices we all tend to do. Like, we plan our stuff, we plan our project, but when it comes to like managing our personal life with professional life, we tend to like sometimes just follow in the path. We just don't plan ourselves out. I think that's one of the key takeaway which can help us out for people who are struggling to take out the time, for people who wants to learn more. Because learning, I feel, in our field, especially in technology, when it's changing continuously, and of course we might be discussing shortly about AI as well if we get time, but things are changing and things are evolving, and in our side of things, when we have to learn so many new technology to keep us up to date. And of course, like, you are working in security side of things, means as a cloud professional, if I am not learning new stuff, but I might be working in a project where still older way of older technologies and on-prem network or on-prem infrastructure is there, but from the security perspective, you always need to learn about new things and new stuff. And probably by in end of podcast, we will be discussing slightly with you if you have some nice resources which we can use to learn and gain more knowledge, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So our main reason or the main motive behind this particular episode is what we plan. I mentioned in our previous episode as well, we will be bringing industry expert and we will be discussing about three news. Now, those three news, of course, security incidents, they occur in different domains. Those attackers or threats to your organization can come from multiple sources and multiple directions. But we, because this podcast is mainly towards cloud computing and related certifications and securing those infrastructure and those environments, we only pick those which are relevant to us. We will be discussing about, so what we did is we picked three news and we will be discussing with Chihao today what could have been done better, what really went wrong. Means we will of course start with what really went wrong in that particular scenario, the real life scenario. What if he would be in that organization, or if he would have like faced similar kind of scenario, similar kind of attack, what he would have done differently, or even in like fixing or optimizing or planning something in advance? Because one thing is responding to an incident, another thing is like you need to plan in advance as well, so incident don't take at the first place. So we have chosen our three news, and I will first quickly read out those three news, and once those news means after I read them out, we'll be going one by one, and I hope Chihao will be up for the challenge and he will be guiding us like better how what should have been done better in those scenarios.
Yep.
All right, so let me quickly open the first link. So first is, of course, people who are in Europe and those listeners who are in UK as well, they must be aware pretty much about this GDPR. We always hear about this compliance, which those organizations which have EU residents or people who are living in European Union countries, all the organizations who are part of it, who are keeping the data belonging to those residents, they have to follow a certain compliance, and GDPR is a kind of pioneer, I say, in that direction, because are a lot of, I think it's pretty strong, right? Jiao means GDPR, what I heard during CCSP when I was reading. It's pretty pretty mature and pretty good in a way. What's your thought on GDPR though?
So GDPR, I think, especially in the European region, even though Britain has exited the EU, so they do have similar kind of regulations, right, mapped back to GDPR, right? So GDPR is a very strong regulations in the region, right? So it involves a lot of things on privacy and whatnot.
Yeah. So our very first news is Volkswagen had a massive data leak, which was caused by failure to secure AWS credential. Now, I'll put the link in show notes as well, so you can read more about it. But what what stood out for me personally when I was like selecting my news is AWS credential. So I think this is straight away related to our cloud computing and cloud. So Jihao, over to you. Means what went wrong here?
Yeah, so in actual fact, Volkswagen faced a massive data leak, right? And the key failure was to leave their AWS credential exposed, right, to the internet, right? So as essentially a vendor who collected data for Audi marketing in the US and Canada, store those credentials in a way that it allows unauthorized access, right, to a trove of personal information. Right, so that is where it all went wrong, because once the gate is, in this case, is the AWS credentials, is left wide open, it doesn't matter how secure the rest of your system is. If someone can walk right in, they will, right? They will go and get the data. So now what could Volkswagen and their vendor have done differently to prevent this fiasco? Right, so the top priority would be to properly secure those AWS credentials and never store them in plain text. That's the basic fundamentals, right? So you need to encrypt it and store it in a secure store, right? So, and certainly not in public repositories or within codes that's publicly accessible, like your GitHub, your public GitHub repository, and so on, right? So adopting best practices like rotating credentials regularly, using role-based access with the principle of least privilege, and employing services like AWS Secrets Manager to store sensitive information could have drastically mitigated this risk, right? And of course, on top of that, robust monitoring tools and alert systems would have sounded the alarm early if something out of the ordinary occurred, like those credentials being used from unusual locations.
Yeah. And when I was going through this, I mean, what you shared is bang on target. I mean, this is something which even when I am designing or implementing a cloud computing solution, this is something which always comes in our top priority, that doesn't matter what you're deploying, make sure on the instance level, you don't use those default credentials, like if your operating system is coming up with Ubuntu or EC2 user. First of all, disable that, start creating your own. On the cloud infra level, if you are, of course, mature organizations have this in practice already, but if you are setting something new, if you are even setting up your personal AWS account, the first thing you can do is don't use your root credential to perform like even your day-to-day normal testing. You have all these IAM roles anywhere, which I implemented recently on one of my AWS projects. They are amazing solution. Different cloud providers have it. And I think following that will certainly help us out in making sure that we avoid all these similar kind of scenarios. One thing does highlight it, like which I really found interesting, was there was even question around, like they were collecting too much data, which is not even required at first place.
Yep.
What's your thought on that?
Yep. So the basic fundamentals of collecting data is that you collect it when you need it, right? So it is the safe approach and practice that you do not collect anything more than what you need or what your organization needs. And also after you use the data, if there is no requirement for you to store the data, so destroy it, that's the safest approach, right? So do not collect data that is more than what you need and store it more than the duration that you need it for.
Of course.
So that's the fundamentals.
Amazing, amazing. I think we are pretty much now aware of what kind of challenges Foxhoven have faced in this particular data leak and what should have been done in a better way. Let's move on to our next news, which is around, I think, the most, I feel, it's something which is really fancy. It means people want to work on Kubernetes. And when I deploy like application, immediately like first thought comes in mind, not even in my mind, but even in the higher management mind is, why don't you plan it on Kubernetes? And of course, those who haven't worked on Kubernetes themselves, they feel like this is a fancy and simple way of deploying the stuff. But those who have worked, they know that Kubernetes is really complicated. And then when you on top of that, you start creating a secure way of using Kubernetes, it's a big challenge. And I don't feel like, means this is my personal thought, but maybe we still don't have enough experienced resource, I say, who are working on Kubernetes or who have a good understanding of how Kubernetes work. Means securing Kubernetes is completely different task, even like basic functioning of Kubernetes. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, Kubernetes is a great technology that's containerized everything. And in terms of security, natively, it promotes more secure environments. Right? Okay. But of course, Kubernetes is another layer, right? So in the past, we used to have servers, we used to have VMs, and now we have containers. In actual fact, everything still runs the same way, right? So you still have your physical server, you still have your hypervisor, and on top of that, you build your containers platform, right? So with all these layers in place, there is higher chances that misconfiguration issues will happen, right? So that's the very common problem with this kind of different levels of platform, right? So at a high level, what went wrong is, of course, the role-based access control that needs to be configured. A lot of people will have problem or have difficulties or even oversight about these controls.
That's true. That's true. And I think what in my like limited experience working on setting up Kubernetes cluster, both on AWS and Azure, this one I think specifically talks about Azure and even like those bare metal server as well. RBAC in Kubernetes is something which is really different from normal RBAC on AWS or any cloud computing infrastructure, because you not only have to create those roles, you need to tag them with user and I think correct term should be service accounts, which is probably, again, means it will open another like can of worms if we talk about service account, which I've seen in my own experience as well, people or engineers don't tend to take those seriously. Like service account is something which we normally try to make it, either ignore them or keep like with not rotating them to be correct term. Like there are like those static credentials which have unlimited access and no one is doing anything to secure them.
And there's no expiry to the password. No one bothers to change the password. Or should I say, people are afraid to change the password in case something breaks, right? So
No, that's true. That's true. And one thing in this one which highlighted to me, you brought it up slightly in previous news as well, storing the code or storing the password on Git. Now, what means how we can have better security on the versioning system like source control, Git, or if we are using Bitbucket, or there are a lot of solutions around that. So what should be better way to secure? Because I think in DevOps or when we talk about like securing these pipelines or these infrastructure, which is slightly on top layer compared to a normal cloud computing layer, they are deployed on top of, like you mentioned, that there's still a base layer and on top of that we are running Kubernetes. So source control, I think it was not that relevant before, but now because of these pipelines and CI/CD and everything, I've seen like people sending or storing code or, like you said, password in plain text. So is there like a better, I should say, solution or how we can make sure our code is secure?
Yeah. So basically, I think nowadays, people, when you do coding, right, people tend to not to store clear text password in their codes, right? So typically they will use a secrets manager to reference it and to call the password from secret stores. But of course, like what you mentioned just now, the versioning, right? So maybe in the first few versions, people start to code to put clear text password in it. And after that, during security testing or static scans on the codes, they found out that the password is actually in the codes itself. They will change it, right? The few versions later, it is no longer there. But of course, in the repository, you have multiple versions, right? So hackers always target those versions of the code that is in the earlier stage, where the test is prior to the test being done, right? So they will if they get the first version of the code, they might find some password over there, right? So this is the way they target those, typically. But of course, when the attackers will have tools to scrape through GitHub and a public repository for any password kind of strings, that's they can just get it from there.
And I think that brings us to this nice solution, which I think on top of my head, maybe it's relevant here, that if your organization or if you are a developer who is building new application or new version of your existing application, make sure to archive and store your older versions or older source code somewhere securely instead of
not on public.
When we build any application or even when we set up something new on our labs or any new infrastructure, we tend to follow like simpler way of deploying it, because ultimately our goal during that time is to make sure we are in up and running phase. We'll think about security later. And we use, I'm not sure whether I'm using the right term, but is it something which we call as shift left? Like, think about security during your initial phase itself.
Yeah, you have pointed it out, it's called shift left, right? So nowadays, at the start of the development, or even when the project even started, security is being considered, right? Doing risk assessment from the start, doing scans while you are developing, and also integrating security scans in your IDE when you are coding. Right, so that's very common nowadays in a very well-established organization where you have a well-established DevSecOps pipeline to help you in the development work.
Amazing. All right, we are all set for our third news, which is around Ruigi Network's cloud platform flaws could have exposed 50,000 devices to remote attacks. Now, personally, I haven't heard about this network's cloud platform. Maybe it's a big organization, but when I was going through this, again, like I found the keyword as cloud, so I picked it up. But what's your thought on this?
Yeah, so for this case, right, what went wrong is that the platform actually had multiple vulnerabilities, unpatched vulnerabilities, likely tied to inadequate access controls and misconfigurations. And also, of course, these flaws opened the door for attackers who could exploit them to gain unauthorized access or even escalate their privileges within the systems after they have gained the initial foothold, right? So when your cloud platform isn't properly locked down, right, be it through weak default credentials, like just now we mentioned, incomplete patching or poorly validated user inputs, it is likely to leave a backdoor unguarded, right? And that's precisely what happened here in this case.
Okay, and I think when there is a maybe it's not slightly related to this topic and this news, but I had to bring up something around vulnerability and patching. So we normally hear this term pretty commonly, like we can't patch everything and we can fix everything. We might be, for example, in my environment, we have to be compliant to PCI DSS. Now PCI DSS of course recommends, like, whole according to CIS benchmark, the list of hardening we have to do on our operating system side. Some of them we still have to keep it like open. We can't fix them, like we can't harden them. How to take exception, or for example in takeoff, in this scenario, like there is a vulnerability, but maybe there is no patch, or even if there is there is a patch, it's not tested that extensively, so it might break your existing application. So
yep,
might be a pushback from end users, there might be a pushback from developers that we can't apply this patch, this is something which is not tested. Or in case of hardening, like we can't harden this particular, like if you want us to disable this service, we can do that because this might break our application. How yep. as a security professional, like you normally take those challenges?
Yep. So first of all, you need to take a look of what kind of vulnerability is it, right? And what is the risk level of that, right? For example, if it depends on the environment, sometimes if these vulnerabilities is occurred on your internet facing system, for example, so the chances, the likelihood of it happen, attacker exploiting on it is very high. The likelihood is very high. And of course, this will have an ultimate higher risk level compared to your internal system, which have the same vulnerabilities. Right? So as an organization, you need to prioritize patching these kind of vulnerabilities first and so on. But of course, sometimes these vulnerabilities are 0-day, which means there's no known patches to it, right? And of course, there are certain technologies and techniques in place, like for example, virtual patching from your IDS, IPS, right, which can actually prevent, have a signature blocking to prevent attackers from coming in using that. While the vendor on your, when the vendor side, they are coming out with the patches. So this virtual patching can actually temporarily helps to fend off these attack signatures. Yep. So these are one of the this is one of the technique that the organization can adopt as well. But of course, from the organizational point of view, internally you must have a robust patch management framework and a vulnerability management framework to manage this kind of vulnerabilities, be it a critical vulnerability, a high, medium, or even low priority of vulnerabilities. Right. So in a typical organization, there will be different timelines, a patching timeline for different risk scenarios. Right. So for a critical one, maybe it will be a shorter time compared to a low vulnerability, which can allow a more longer time frame of patching. Vulnerability management and patch management is one of the tedious operation process in every organization. Right? People will be chasing, right, to patch things, but once they have patch finish everything, new vulnerabilities come. Right. Yeah. So that's ongoing kind of a process. Even if you have a whole team doing the patching and vulnerability management, it's always never enough.
And I think another term which I feel is relevant here is around SBOM, like when we are using different processes, which as a developer we tend to get these like small libraries from
yep.
open source application and tend to use it in our code and our application without even knowing, like this might be having some ingrained vulnerability which ultimately is going to be exploited if you use it in application side as well. So yeah, I mean, you mentioned correctly, it should be part of organization culture and we should be having a robust framework and a well-defined like roles around who will be patching it up and how frequently we need to patch and review everything.
Yep.
Amazing. Well, I think we have covered all three news and I promise my listeners that I won't be making longer episodes from now on, because what we are doing from this time onwards is we are having weekly episodes, and if I make them longer, then it won't be feasible for me to release it every week. I think the last bit is about, first of all, where can, if some of the listener, if they want to catch up with you or if you want to find you, what's the best way for that?
Okay, so basically you can find me on LinkedIn, right? So just find my full name and you'll be able to get a search result. So for those who are based in Singapore, I'm also active in my local cybersecurity environment here, right? So if you are based here, so you can catch me up at those community events or seminars, right? So feel free to ping me on LinkedIn as well anytime. I'm always happy to share my insights on cybersecurity with you.
Amazing. And any books or any resource which you feel might be good for listeners?
Yeah, so recently I read a few books, right? So first of all, I would like to recommend one of the books called The Phoenix Project, right, by Jin Kim. Calvin Beer and Josh Spafford, right? So it is written like a novel, right? So it is a very super engaging kind of book, right? It opened up your eyes to how DevOps practices can actually transform an organization's workflow and culture plus, right? There's a lot of overlap with security consideration throughout the story as well. So they actually convert real life experience into a novel itself. So that's one of the book I have read. Another one is on Tribe of Hackers, right, by Marcus J. Carey, right, and Jennifer Jin, right. So this is a must read for every security professional out there, right. So it's essentially a collection of interviews with cybersecurity professionals from all walks of life, right, different domains, offering tips, stories, and career advices. Right, so you can get all these different perspectives in one place, this book, and also it is especially helpful if you're looking to break into the industry or expanding your skill set as well. Yep, so another book I have read is on Countdown to Zero Day, right, so by Kim Zetter, right, so it dives into the story behind the Stuxnet worm, so the one that is affecting the Iranian nuclear power plant, right, so this is considered one of the earliest and most sophisticated cyber attacks on critical infrastructure, right, so these yeah, so it reads almost like a spy thriller, right? But it also grounded in real world events and offering fascinating insights into nation state cyber operations.
I think this is really key these days because of all these like threat switches and even like not happening, like the situation which we can see around the world where they are continuously threatening at least words between political leaders around big states and big nations and attacks around that. Maybe it was earlier more into we used to see in the movies and everything, but I think it's getting more and more real now, and with so many people depending on these critical infrastructure and our day-to-day life directly and indirectly is dependent on these tech. It's really critical now.
So basically, if you see those in the movies, people can think of it.
Yeah,
it can happen, right? So
yeah, that's right. I think that's I think the crux of it. Means if someone have thought it to play it in the movie, then it's a real possibility. That's why they
yes
at the first place. So
yep,
yeah, that's a nice way to end our discussion for today. So thanks, Chihao. I will be, of course, for those who are listening, I'll be putting all the links in the show notes around the books which Chihao mentioned, and of course his LinkedIn ID as well, so you can catch up with him. And we will be having our regular episode next week, and of course for next month's monthly digest we'll be having another industry expert, and of course we'll be having Chihao some other time as well because of all the expert insight he always love to share with us. So thank you again, Chihao. Hope you
yep,
have
thanks for inviting.
An amazing week ahead.
Yep. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Follow the show so you don't miss out, as we deliver piping hot topics every week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.